This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. I'm your host, Oz Oddball. Thank you for joining me. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about time travel, specifically what it's all about, is it possible, and a few people who claim to be time travelers. So I hope you're all ready for this, and maybe we can take a trip back in time or jump forward in the future. Alrighty, if you haven't already, make sure you're following me on Twitter at Aussie Oddball. That's the same on Instagram at Aussie Oddball. You can also find me on Facebook, and you can send me your stories. You can also send me anything you want to talk about, any discussion points, any questions, or to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. That's theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. And I'm pretty responsive on there and on Twitter as well. Not so much on the Facebook, a little bit on Instagram, but you'll definitely find me on Twitter and on the emails there. All right, before we go on, make sure you check out Straight Up Strange Productions. It's the crew that I work with. It's our network, and some great shows in there that will cover you for a long, long time. And also make sure you check out the TeePublic store. That's the Oddball Aussie Podcast on TeePublic. If you want to buy some stickers, shirts, all that sort of thing, all the money goes straight back into the show. It pays for things like, software, it pays for equipment, all that sort of stuff, and it's always appreciated. And thank you for people who recently bought a couple of shirts. I really do appreciate that. And the mugs are pretty cool too. I'm a mug collector, and I still haven't bought myself a mug yet. So if you want to buy me a Christmas present, maybe re-gift me my own mug. All right, I hope you've all had a pretty good week. I've been flat out as usual, but really keen to get into this one. I'd planned to do this one a few weeks ago, but it didn't really come about. So really keen to get into this with you all today. So I sort of had to leave it for the future. Oh, that's terrible. All right. So what are we talking about? We're talking about time travel. So time travel, it's possible in some different, in certain ways. Some people will tell you that it's 100% possible because they are time travels, and we'll get into them shortly. But although humans can't hop into time machine and go back in time, we do know that clocks and airplanes and satellites travel at a different speed than those on Earth. So there is a technical time travel. So we all travel in time. We travel 1 year in time between birthdays, for example, and we're all traveling in time at approximately the same speed, 1 second per second. So NASA's space telescopes also give us a way to look back in time. Telescopes help us see stars and galaxies that are very far away. It takes a long time for the light from faraway galaxies to reach us. So when we look into the sky with a telescope, we're seeing those stars and galaxies and how they looked like a very long time ago. So that's sort of, it's technical time travel. However, when we think the phrase time travel, we're normally talking about faster than one per 1 second. So this kind of time travel means, going ahead in time or going back in time. So more than 100 years ago, a famous scientist, Albert Einstein, he had the idea of relativity. So the theory says that time and space are linked together. Einstein also said that our universe has a speed limit. Nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. So Einstein's theory does dictate that space and time are linked together. So what does this mean for time travel? Well, according to this theory, the faster you travel, the slower you experience time. So imagine for anyone who watches those Marvel movies and things like that, you've got all the guys who can run really fast, or even Flash in DC Universe, and the way they film it is those slow motion scenes. So many movies do the slow-mo thing now where they're like running around, they can move things, and there's always some sort of 80s song playing. So we saw that in Quicksilver and a couple of movies did it. And It's basically it. That's that part of what they do with time travel, that is correct. So you would perceive it in a much slower time around you. So, for example, there was an experiment that used two clocks set to the exact same time. One clock stayed on Earth while the other flew in an aeroplane, going in the same direction Earth rotates. After the airplane flew around the world, scientists compared the two clocks. The clock on the fast-moving aeroplane was slightly behind the clock on the ground, so the clock on the airplane was traveling slightly slower in time than 1 second per second. So you can sort of see how this gets used in everyday life. We can't have a time machine. We can't go backwards and forwards in the future by thousands or even hundreds or even days of years. But that kind of time travel, it only happens in books and movies. But the math of time travel does affect the things we use every day. So GPS, for example, is always dictated by time and travel. So it helps us figure out how to get to new places. NASA scientists also use a high accuracy version of GPS to keep track of where satellites are in space. But did you know the GPS relies on time travel calculations? So GPS satellites orbit the Earth very quickly at about 8,700 miles. That's about 14,000 kilometers per hour. This slows down GPS satellite clocks by a small fraction of a second, similar to the airplane that we talked about before. So the satellites are also orbiting Earth about 12,550 miles, so it's 20,200 kilometers, so they're above the surface. This actually speeds up the GPS. So the satellite clocks are slightly larger, have a slightly larger fraction of a second. So Einstein's theory also says that gravity curves space and time, causing the passage of time, rather, to slow down. High up where the satellites orbit, Earth's gravity is much weaker. This causes the clocks on GPS satellites to run faster than clocks on the ground. The combined result is that clocks on GPS satellites experience time at a rate slightly faster than 1 second per second, and scientists can use the math to correct for those differences. Thus, the GPS data that we use is corrected before you receive it. So if scientists didn't correct the GPS clocks, there would be problems. You wouldn't be able to correctly calculate their position or yours because the satellite would already be out of range. So it always relies rather on a bit of configuration. So yeah, there is definitely, so there are examples of actual time travel. That's locked in, that's real time travel. So if someone wants to tell you that some time travel doesn't exist, refer to that. That is definitely time travel 100% exists. All right, so that's, the mainstream science of it out of the way, mostly. There's so much more fun stuff to think about with time travel. You've got to consider how it's proposed in books, movies, things of that sort, and some real-world cases that may or may not have really happened. And big issue when it comes to time travel is a lot of doctored images out there. There's a lot of people out there doing some really great Photoshop work that makes it look like someone had something in a different time, and they're going, oh, well, must be time travel. Look at this photo. Hello there, future Oz just here correcting past Oz's mistakes. I'm basically a time traveler. So the story I'm just about to refer to is the present day hipster at the 1941 bridge opening. I mistakenly say it's the JFK assassination. I don't know why I got that mixed up, but it's actually a bridge opening at South Fork Bridge in Goldbridge, British Columbia in 1941. And everything the man's wearing is still exactly what I say. It's the sunglasses and the camera. They're all from 1941, from that era of time. They did exist. And a lot of people try to say that, these clothing items didn't exist. Well, they did. So just correcting that, and I actually correct myself later on in the show, but I just wanted to get this done before you all get too far in, because I know I'll get the emails and the replies on Twitter saying, Oz, you got this wrong. So correcting myself on the record. Anyway, take it away, past Oz. Enjoy. A lot of time they're really well done Photoshops, though sometimes it's just facts are confused. So there's that really famous photo of the man with the sunglasses and the camera, and he's at the procession where JFK got shot. So a lot of people point to that as him being a time traveler, and they say, well, you know, sunglasses weren't invented around that time, and you know, the camera he was using was way too new. When you actually do the research yourself, I mean, those sunglasses weren't that crazy. Like, sunglasses did exist back then, but they say that that particular shape, sort of like an Oakley style, but Ray-Bans were actually making shaped sunglasses like that. They weren't popular amongst men of the time. They were fairly modern. But if you look at this fella in the image, he looks like a fairly modern guy. Now, that's not a doctored image. That's a real image. It's just the facts have been skewed. So then when you look at his camera, no, it's not a box Browning, but it is sort of a competitor, or it's a camera that's from the same era, just wasn't as popular, wasn't as well known. So it's definitely all real stuff, but he didn't travel back in time. He wouldn't had to have traveled in the future to get those things to come back in time. There was just items that obviously he owned. He was a bit of a quirkier looking guy, I guess. And so we have to sort of pull that apart. We do need to look at what's real and what's been made up over the years. So how does story writing and movies sort of dictate? And this sort of ties into what we think about time travel as well. So essentially, there's four main types of time travel that is used in a lot of literature. So it's seeing the future. So we're thinking about people who are seers. We're thinking about psychics and mediums, people like that who see the future. Tarot card readers, people like that. In these stories, it's actually information that travels through time. And this might be the most scientifically plausible form of time travel, one that is already happening all the time on the quantum level. Visions of the future have shown up in literature and mythology for millennia, and we also call them prophecies, things of that. So, this is... We'll get back into this in a minute. We'll come back around to that. Because there are a lot of people who believe in that, and there's actually some paracausal reason why this could exist. So then we move on to stories of preventable foresight. So this ties in. So this isn't one of the four. This ties in with the first one, with the seeing the future. So, these are people giving stories. They had a dream and they told their neighbor, you know, don't drive the car tomorrow. I saw you were in a car accident, and then they predict that there was a major car accident down the road, and their neighbor didn't listen to them, that type of thing. Then traveling to the future. So one of the clearest forms of time travel, and from the narrative H.G. Wells, The Time Machine, really made this popular, is the physical being moved through time. So this is where we think about Back to the Future, things of that nature. And the third one of the same sort of vein, but we do need to make sure it is noticed as something different, is traveling to the past. So in some stories, in some narratives, it is possible to go to the future, but not to the past, and vice versa. So the other part of the going back in the past is the changing history. So in narratives, most of the time, you don't go to the future to change history. If you know what I mean, you go to the past to change history. And then you've got immutable timelines. So they're stories where characters find themselves fundamentally incapable of altering history. So it's the 12 Monkeys type story. It's where someone keeps trying to go back in time to prevent an apocalyptic man-made plague, but they just can't. It's inevitable. And by the time they finish, they realize how inevitable it really is. Then we move on to the fourth. So this is the fourth locked-in one. Fourth one that gets used in cinema and writing quite a bit, which is time loops. And so time loops are, you know, your Groundhog Day. Someone wakes up and they live out their life for the day. Then they go to sleep, or they die in their life and they wake up the next day. This is seen in Before I Fall, Happy Death Day, Edge of Tomorrow. There's a lot of interesting movies and TV shows out there. Russian Doll is a more recent one. But yeah, so that's where they'll wake up, they get stuck in a loop and they can't get out of it, and they've got to figure out how they're going to get out of it. And most of those stories are they tie to more comical type of events, but there are definitely some more serious stuff out there. So now that we've seen the major four, what do all these break down to? Well, some people will go with the anything goes feeling of it. So, you know, they can travel back and forth within the historical timeline. It doesn't really matter how they're doing it or why they're doing it. You know, it could be phone booth. They could use a hot tub, for instance, in Hot Tub Time Machine. And it's just a sort of gateway, essentially. Whatever they use is just a prop to carry the movie or carry the book. So then you got the branching reality. So we see this in, I think Marvel might have used this. So changes the past, they don't rewrite history, it just splits. So this is you've got to be a really good writer to use this. I think this is why I think in Endgame and a few of those I really switched off, because it was really bad writing in the sense that they're trying to correct themselves now, I noticed, with Loki and a few other shows like that. But the way they wrote the timeline, how the timelines worked, made it sound that all the timelines would be fixed, and then they realized that couldn't work because there'd be too many fractures, because every time you fracture the timeline, it'll fracture again and again and again. It has to be tidy from the start. Like, when you tell a story about time travel, or when you make a movie about time travel, and if you're going to be someone who says you're a time traveler, some of these people say their time travels are got a damn packed. Honestly, they should go and work for cinemas, because they'll tell you exactly how time travel works. Maybe it's because they really are. Who knows? But if you're going to tell a time travel story, you really need to explain to the audience at the start, explain to the reader from the start how time travel works in your story. If you don't explain it from the start, if you're having to put patches in the whole way through, it really doesn't work. So, for instance, Back to the Future, one of my all-time favorite movies. So I'm probably a little bit biased on it, but it is really well done in the sense of time travel. It doesn't answer a ton of questions, but it doesn't ask a ton of questions either. It doesn't have the audience asking too many questions. They create a fairly linear time and space type of thing. So when Michael J. Fox's character leaves to go into the future, when he returns, he's returning just as he's leaving to go to the future. So there's no chance of there being two Martys. It's only going to be the one. So that's a really good way of looking at it. It doesn't create all these branches, and it just really runs on that one linear track. Safe way of doing it, but a really fun way of doing it. Then you got time dilation. Characters traveling off-world. So think Stargates, things of that nature. So they're traveling forward in time, technically, because to get to those planets would take light years. So they travel through something like a portal or a Stargate, or they use a ship of some sort to time travel. So that would be something like Millennium Falcon, for instance. I'm using a lot of movie references through this, but this part here, we're breaking away from the science. Now we're more into your media style, like your cinema and your story and your books. Then you got another type, which is it's always happened. So all of time is fixed on a predestined loop in which the very act of time travel itself sets the events of the story into motion. So this one can confuse and delves closer to the realm of theology than science. It feels gimmicky and has become something of a trope, making it hard to pull off in a satisfying way for your audience. This type also invites the audience to question if your protagonist ever had free will or agency in the story. So things like Terminator. Terminator is a really good one for this. So essentially, it's would anything have changed if we hadn't have come back from time, if we had changed something, or would it all just turn out the same? So that's a really, really interesting one. Very hard to pull off if done wrong. And later Terminator movies, not pointing any fingers. basically Terminator 3 onwards, really had a bad way of doing this. So Type 5, seeing the future, we already went into that. So the being able to see the future or see the past, depending on what medium. And then you've got things like the unstuck mind, where characters conscious transport through time within their body to live their life at different ages. So this is one that is, once again, there could be some paracausal reasoning behind this. And then the unstuck body, which is where a character's body or object becomes physically detached from the flow of time within the surrounding universe, becoming inverted or younger. So things like this, if you're the unstuck mind, you might consider The Night Before Christmas story to be a really good time travel unstuck mind story. He's out of body experience and he's going forward into the future, and he believes this is all real. Where to believe as viewers and readers that what happens to him is all real, but. So if you take that into account, that means that if it's all real, then he's had an out-of-body experience, essentially. Or he's become a ghost and that type of thing. Depends on which version of The Night Before Christmas you want to read or watch. So let's go back to the first one, which we read out, which is the being able to see into the future. And this is one that could have some paracausal effects that might explain some things, but not all things. And the reason why we're sort of covering the science and the story writing aspect of this to begin with is because these two work hand in hand. Writers will sometimes awkwardly try to use science to show how time travel works in their book or their movie or the TV show. Likewise, scientists, when trying to explain time travel to people, will a lot of time use well-made media to explain how the time travel works. So for instance, a really good example of sort of time travel, but shown in a different way. So Stranger Things shows the scientist, shows the doctor, not doctor, the school teacher. He gets these two sheets of paper and he folds them over and he puts a hole through it. And he talks about there being two dimensions and the kids being able to travel through those two dimensions. Very similar thing in time travel. So if you took a folded sheet of paper, or more likely a piece of paper, and you stuck the ends together and create it and then push it down in sort of an oval shape. Now, put a hole in one end and put it straight through out to the other side. The idea is that as time's traveling forward around that loop, if you were to go into that hole, you could end up into the future, but you couldn't we wouldn't be able to return back. So it'd be a paracausal, it'd be a loop that you'd be stuck in. So that's the physical that we're talking about. But let's talk about retrocausality in terms of being able to see back in the past or see the future, for instance. So the idea that retrocausality is the reverse of causality. So it's the idea that an effect can happen before its cause. So normally it's cause and then effect. This idea is that we have effect and then cause and then effect. It's often used as a thought experiment by scientists considering the philosophy underpinning physics and whether the future can affect the present the same way the present affects the future. So there are a lot of time independent parts of quantum mechanics that leave open the possibility that particles or information, like a hypothetical tachyon particle that always moves faster than light, can travel back in time. And that's a really interesting one. So the tachyon particle, many people will try to tell their friends or to sound smart, will talk about the tachyon particle and how it moves faster than light. There's no evidence of this. Though, if there were such a thing as a tachyon particle, we could then establish maybe a baseline of, okay, let's say this does exist, and this is the thought experiment. Let's say it does exist. Retrocausality is used then to explain several different strange physics phenomena. Now, for a moment, using, I guess, paraphysics, you might call it. I wonder if that's a new term I've just made up. But let's apply this to the idea of a thought or a memory. Now, if thought or memory could be seen or could be given a physical form, like if the idea of a thought or a memory had a some form of wavelength or particle length, the idea would be that it travels around and it comes back around. So time being a loop, if we follow that. So when we think about psychics and we think about people who can see the future, especially, we're thinking about someone who's the energy of that thought or that experience has come back around. And this is where a lot of people use this to say, see, this is why people can predict really terrible things, but they don't know when it's where or when exactly it's going to happen. That could also be a really easy cop-out to say, something's going to blow up, I just don't know when. Yeah, well, of course, that's pretty easy to say that. It's spooky when people get the dates right. That I'll admit to that. But the idea would be that there was enough energy or enough wavelength created from that event in history that it then transcends, it goes through time, it loops back around. And the question after that is why certain people? So then that is led into that some people are more open to it. Some people are have a different, maybe they've evolved a little bit differently to be a little bit more active, and they can pick up on these signals a lot easier than others. Then other people are just full of shit. Look, I don't mean to sound cynical, and I know a couple of people who claim to be psychics, and I do actually believe they're pretty good at it. But then I also know more than a dozen people who are completely full of shit, and I would never trust my family members to go and see them ever again, especially ones who use cold talking to bring up that a person's loved one died and how they died. It's basically street magicians, that type of thing. It's making you believe you're seeing something when you're seeing something else. So you say things that you don't realize that you're saying, or you give away facial tics that you don't realize you're giving away. But we can go into that another time. But the idea with this would be that, yeah, these energies, exactly what I said, these energies are coming back around. So that's the scientific way of looking at it. People will just say that it's a paranormal thing, it's something, but really at the end of the day, even if it is something paranormal, eventually, maybe not now, if it is real, then we should be able to eventually explain it with some form of science. And perhaps this is the way of doing it. So perhaps retrocausality is one way that we might find out that this is real. And in that sense, a psychic who can tell the future, who can predict things properly, maybe it's the fact that they're seeing the future, or perhaps it's I've had some psychics tell me that it's a soul that is due to die in the future, that already knows it's dead, passing through time. It gets very, very complicated with some of those people. And trust me, I've been through a few of the psychic conferences, and look, small percentage, great people who just genuinely want to help people and genuinely probably have something strange about them. There's a big group of them that are at these things that are just out there looking at everyone like money bags. How can I get money out of you for doing really no work at all? And how many books can I sell in regards to that? It's very scary. So yeah, time travel theoretically possible on many different levels, and we've seen that with what we just discussed. So we're going to now go to a quick break, and then after this, we're going to get into the real cool stuff. So we're going to get into paradoxes. We're going to get into physical things that we've found that might be because of time travel. And we're going to get into actual time travels. So please hang around for the second part of the Oddball Aussie podcast. Really enjoying this. It's been a bit of a nerd out on the science stuff. We're going to ease up on the science stuff now. We're going to go headlong into the abyss, and we're going to get weird, people. Alrighty. So before we go, while we're at break, you'll be listening to a band from 2008. This is Laws of Gravity, and it's their song, Take It All. So that was a little bit different, a little bit, I don't know, a little bit of Joplin in there, like if Joplin was a metal singer, I guess. So, yeah, not a bad song. All right, so what did I promise you? I promised that we're going to talk about some weird stuff now, but where to begin? There is so much weird stuff there. Let's talk about paradoxes of time travel. So these are the things that stop time travel from being considered real, or there are things that could hold back the belief of time travel. So predestination paradox occurs when the actions of a person traveling back in time becomes part of past events and may ultimately cause the event he is trying to prevent to take place. This results in a temporal causality loop in which event one in the past influences event two in the future, time travel to the past, which then causes event one to occur, with the circular loop of events ensuring the history is not altered by the time traveler, and that any attempts to stop something from happening in the past will simply lead to the cause itself. So then we've got the bootstrap paradox. A bootstrap paradox is a type of paradox in which an object, person, or piece of information sent back in time results in an infinite loop where the object has no discernible origin. So we're going to get into a few of these items that could be part of this and exists without ever being created. It is also known as the ontological paradox, as ontology is a branch of philosophy concerned with the nature of being or existence. So it brings even the question of the existence into the object. So as we go down, we've also got the grandfather paradox. This concerns self-inconsistent solutions to a timeline's history caused by traveling back in time. For example, if you traveled to the past and killed your grandfather, you would never have been born and would not have been able to travel to the past. A paradox. So how could you ever gone back? So does that, so a lot of people lean on this and say that's proof that time travel could not exist, because if you could do that, then everything falls apart. Doesn't mean that you didn't do it. There's a fairly spicy way of getting around this. And we saw it on Futurama. Futurama, to use this one. So instead of killing your... So you kill your grandfather. Now, that means you can't be born. Well, there's a way around it. You become your own grandfather. So, yeah. It sounds as bad as what it... It is as bad as what it sounds. So essentially, you'd kill your grandfather and you'd sleep with your grandmother. And then this would cause you to be born in the future, possibly. I mean, I say possibly because this is sort of another paradox, isn't it? Because one chain of events like that could lead to another change that could lead to you really not being born. Yeah. So would you take the risk? Is what I'm asking. So if you went back in time, you accidentally killed your grandfather, or you killed a family member, that could lead to you being born. So grandmother, grandfather, what have you. Would you take the chance and think, well, I have to exist, so I've got to knock off my grandmother? Or do you think to yourself, well, I've killed my grandfather, so I've come back in the past, so I'm stuck in the past now. That's the other way that you look at it, is that doing something like that would irreparably leave you in the past, because you couldn't go into the future. You'd be stuck. But then this leads into, how did you get back to the past in the first place? So does that then cause different routes of the same timeline? Who knows? But yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher. So within this, you've got the timeline protection hypothesis. So you pop back in time, walk up to your grandfather and point a revolver at his head. You pull the trigger, but the gun fails to fire. Click, click, click. The bullets in the chamber have dents in the firing caps. You point the gun elsewhere and pull the trigger. Bang. Point at your grandfather. Click, click, click. So you try another method to kill him. But that only leads to scars that in later life he attributed to the world's worst mugger. So essentially it's the timeline almost being personified, that anything you do will always lead to you. It will always lead to you correcting. Well, the timeline will always auto-correct itself is the idea. Then obviously the multi-universes splits off. And here's another good one. Let's kill Hitler paradox. So similar to the grandfather paradox, which paradoxically prevents your own birth, the killing Hitler paradox erases your own reason for going back in time to kill Hitler. So everyone says, you know, if I could go back in time, I'd kill Hitler when he's a baby. Few problems with that. So if you go back in time and kill Hitler, your future self wouldn't have a reason to go back in time and kill Hitler. So how could that happen? So while killing grandpa might have a limited butterfly effect, killing Hitler would have a far-reaching consequences for everyone in the world, even if only for the fact you studied him in school. So he wouldn't exist in the books apart from that he might have been a man, it might have been a baby, and why would you read about a baby being killed or a child being killed, depending on what Hitler you choose to kill, I guess. The other thing is going back and killing Hitler while he's a fully grown man and not in power yet. Once again, does this change anything because his party was still in play? That's getting more into a historical, you're really looking at a bunch of different things there, but we're sticking to time travel. So the paradox itself arises from the idea that if you were successful, then you would have no reason to travel back in the first place. So, interesting one to think about. So, American theoretical physicist Joseph Polkinski, he came up with Polkinski's paradox, and it's proposed a time paradox scenario in which a billiard ball enters a wormhole and emerges out the other end in the past just in time to collide with its younger version and stop it going into the wormhole in the first place. Polkinski's paradox is taken seriously by physicists, as there is nothing in Einstein's general relativity to rule out the possibility of time travel. Closed time like curves, CTCs, or tunnels through space-time. Furthermore, it has the advantage of being based upon the laws of motion without having to refer to the indeterministic concept of free will, and so presents a better research method for scientists to think about the paradox. So there's a handful for you to consider, and maybe use them with your families as a bit of a thought game, a bit of a conversation starter. It's really, really interesting what people come up with, especially the grandfathering one. The idea of sleeping with your grandmother essentially comes from people goofing off and coming up with these ideas. So talk to your friends and family about the grandfather paradox, especially, and the let's kill Hitler paradox. They're two really good ones to get people really engaging conversations. It's quite interesting to see what people come up with. And if you've got any thoughts on that, send me an email to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, or even message me on Twitter. I'd love to have a discussion with people over Twitter and get a few people going, because there's definitely a lot of opinions out there on that, on the paradox. So how about we get into something we can see and hold, physical stuff, proof that people have traveled time for thousands of years, or proof that we were visited by aliens. We're not going to go into the alien stuff today. We're talking about the time travelers. But right now we're going to talk about these artifacts that time travelers may have left behind. So every once in a while, archaeology digs up something that we can't explain, and something that shouldn't exist from the time frame that it's been aged at. Sometimes this is purely a mistake on archaeology's behalf. Sometimes our dating techniques in the past have been wrong. Other times it's because certain things have happened to the artifact that have made us believe it. But then on the off chance, maybe it's because a time traveler left it there. So the London Hammer. Many of you would probably know the London Hammer. Now, this is fairly famous, and it's older than it should be. So in June 1936, or 34, it does vary, Max Hahn and his wife Emma were on a walk when they noticed a rock with wood protruding from its core. They decided to take the oddity home and later cracked it open with a hammer and a chisel. Ironically, what they found within seemed to be an archaic hammer of sorts. They turned it to a team of archaeologists who checked it, and as it turns out, the rock encasing the hammer was dated to the Ordovician more than 400 million years ago. So no pre-dinosaurs weren't using tools. There is some question regarding the dating, though. But here's the kicker. According to initial measurements, the hammer itself turned out to be more than 500 million years old. Apparently, it's so old that a section of the handle has begun to transform into coal. Creationists, of course, were all over this, and the creationist Karl Bohr latched onto the hammer in the 80s, even using it as the basis of speculation of how the atmospheric quality of pre-flood Earth could have encouraged the growth of giants. The hammer's head, made of more than 96% iron, is far more pure than anything nature could have achieved without an assistance of some technology. But obviously, the technology couldn't have existed back then. So since the 30s, there have been some questions, obviously, that have been asked, and some reasonable answers have been drawn, but never any 100% proof. But one of the best proposed explanations from science is that the highly soluble minerals in the ancient limestone may have formed a concretion around the object, thus making it seem that it is as old as the minerals themselves. But this has not been confirmed. In fact, radiocarbon is yet to be undertaken from the hammer itself, which bring a significant question mark over the date of the hammer. So now the hammer is on exhibit at the so-called Creation Evidence Museum, which is also kind of unfortunate because the curators don't allow scientists to test on the London Hammer. So that is pretty unfortunate because we're never really going to get the proper answers until someone lets us properly test these things. So potentially we're looking at sort of an apocalypse type scenario where engineering was lost due to the end of a culture or end of a reign of a certain group of people. We obviously didn't see that with the Greeks because the Greeks survived. Greece exists today. But potentially this way of engineering, this type of belief may have been discouraged or even treated like witchcraft eventually. Maybe people went about taking out those who created such instruments. That's, I don't know, how advanced the Greeks were. It could also just be us misunderstanding how advanced they truly were. A lot of people say this is where aliens have come in contact with us and taught us things back then, and then we forgot about them, or we treated the aliens badly, and that's where we get our gods and stuff from. There's a whole nother story to be told about that. But if we're talking about archaeology and time travel, the idea is that essentially somebody went back in time and taught these people how to make this thing. And when you look at it, it would make sense. But at the same time, that's with us believing that the Greeks couldn't have done this. And technologically, they probably could have made it. They had the tools to make it, so it was possible. And the fact that this one survived makes people go, so was this a rare one-off that was built? Then how did we find it? How do we find it intact underwater? Well, mostly intact. Or is it that it was so highly prized that it was looked after in such a good way? So many questions with this, and we're never really going to know the answer. But it's fair to say that the workmanship has not been seen since in that time frame at least. So then we got the dropper stones, fairly common looking disc, but it's got a pretty good story. In 1938, an expedition led by archaeologist Dr. Chi Pu Te into the Bayan Kara Ula in China, made an astonishing discovery. Nearby caves held the races of the ancient culture which once occupied them. Buried under thick layers of dust, hundreds of stone discs lay scattered around the cave's interior. There seemed to be nothing spectacular initially, but the discs turned out to be eerily similar to phonograph records. 9 inches in diameter, a circle cut into their centers, and an obvious spiral groove. They are believed to be more than 10,000 years old, but the spiral, as it turns out, is composed of tiny hieroglyphs. So when studied and translated, it was revealed that the discs tell an amazing story of spaceships that crashed into mountains, piloted by people who called themselves the Dropa. At least that's what the Sun Um Nui, the Chinese researcher in charge of the Dropa stones, concluded. Now, some people have called Sun Um Nui into question over their bias of what they believed, but it is very, very interesting, and these things are amazingly intact. So while his announcement startled the world at first, he was subsequently ridiculed by most of the scientific community, and he went on a self-imposed exile in Japan. Russian researchers requested the disc for studying, and China actually sent a few to Moscow. In the famous Soviet magazine Sputnik, Dr. Vyacheslav Saizev described the experiment where the disc was supposedly placed on a special turntable where they were shown to vibrate or hum in an unusual rhythm, though an electric charge is passing through them. However, research wasn't continued, or at least it wasn't made public. So this, a lot of people, conspiracy theorists, ufologists, go down the path to say this was contact. This was a way of aliens being able to translate, and this was a way of them showing us their stories. I mean, we essentially did the same thing. We've sent golden records out there with certain things on them to play it, that aliens could play and get an idea of who we are. So that exists. So why wouldn't they do this to us? Now, the other side of this is a lot of people said these rings are very similar to what people in China use. Yeah, you get the money with the holes in the middle. And it could just be symbols. It could just be purely symbolism based on the ideas of the people at the time. It could have also been used as some sort of ritual type thing. Maybe it was placed on display, stacked on top of each other. Other people even said maybe it was a type of game. We're never really going to know, again, because a lot of these artifacts get locked up and we don't get to actually look at them or view them ever again. So sad, but very interesting. Very interesting. I'd love to know what the Russians were getting at when they talked about the hum. Then we got the Saqqara bird, the Egyptian aeroplane. Now, these are little figurines, little wooden and sometimes gold figurines that were found in the 1898 excavation of the Padi Emen tomb in Saqqara, Egypt. The Saqqara bird, as you could have guessed, a bird-shaped artifact made from wood of a sycamore tree, weighing in at just under 40 grams and with a wingspan of more than 7 inches, it's been dated back to approximately 200 BC, or 2200 years ago. Lack of documentation and other data has led to some speculation regarding its function. In fact, the ancient Egyptians were well aware of the principle of aviation, but it's not really clear on how it translates into the artifact itself. So these little wooden ones, they, to me, yes, they look like an aeroplane, but they are also, they have the head of a hawk. So later on, they did find a gold-shaped little aircraft, and you can buy remakes of them on online, even eBay. You can buy them as pendants. And people say they're perfectly formed as an aircraft. So why would they make things like this? Well, it depends on what angle you look at them from. Once again, people making out that the ancients were dumber than what we give them credit for. Essentially, maybe this was them trying to figure out how to make a glider of some sort. I mean, there's potential for all these sorts of things. And the hard thing is knowing precisely how advanced their mathematics and things were. We know that that was precise. We know they were smart. But was that due to interactions? Again, the ufology community comes into it. Was that due to them being told or taught? Or was that due to a time traveler going back in time and visiting and giving away a few secrets? It's really interesting. Most of the time with most of these artifacts, I tend to go down the road of we underestimate how smart they really were. Then you've got ones like everyone knows about, or a lot of people know about the Baghdad Battery, especially from Mythbusters. They tried to make one. So they found these devices that consist of a 5.5-inch high clay vessel, inside of which was a copper cylinder held in place by asphalt. Within the cylinder, archaeologists found an oxidized iron rod. In 1940, William Koenig suggested that these would be a galvanic cell, perhaps used for electroplating gold onto silver objects. Nobody has been able to prove him wrong, especially since it's only needed to be filled with acid or alkaline substances to produce the electric charge, which the Mythbusters proved is possible, but not really reliable and not something that you'd really bother with doing. So maybe it was an experiment. Maybe, I mean, you got to think like there were ancient scientists of a sense. So, yeah, it could be things like that. And then, of course, throughout history, we find things like coins from modern eras inside stone that's hundreds of thousands of years old, millions of years old. Once again, that could be similar to the hammer found in the stone, that perhaps this is just stalactites or stalagmites that have grown around the stone, around the coin or the object. We see the same thing with bullets. People have found bullet shells encased in stone that's hundreds of thousands to millions of years old. And potentially that could just be, once again, that the stone has grown around it. And yes, the stone that we're testing and the way we used to test things would show that it was a certain age. But of course, without radiocarbon testing, it's really hard to tell. And a lot of these artifacts strangely go missing when scientists come to visit. So, that sort of covers a lot of things. You've got things like the Nazca drawings, how anyone could draw from almost like they had a view from space. That sort of gets away from the time travel stuff. So I know there's a lot more out there and a lot of people will be saying, but what about this and what about this? Look, at the end of the day, we'll probably go back to this and we'll probably have a look at a lot of these in the future. Because we will be coming back to time traveling again at some point, where we're just going to focus on probably a couple of the main supposed time travelers. So they're who we're going to talk about now. So time travel claims and urban legends. This is where it gets really weird. We've got some pretty interesting time travelers, and some people have claimed over the years that they have been to the future or been to the past, or that they're stuck in our timeline and they can't get back. I can also guarantee that was probably used as a pickup line after the Terminator movie came out. But we'll just list a few. We'll go through a few of the well-known ones. Charlotte Ann Mobley and Eleanor Jourdain. The Mobley Jourdain incident, or the ghosts of Petit Trianon or Versailles, refers to claims of time travel and hauntings made by Charlotte Ann Mobley, 1846 to 1937, and Eleanor Jourdain, 1863 to 1924. In 1911, Mobley and Jourdain published a book entitled An Adventure under the names Elizabeth Morrison and Francis Lamont. Their book describes a visit they made to the Petit Trianon, a small chateau in the grounds of the Palace of Versailles, where they claim they saw ghosts including Marie Antoinette and others. Their story caused a sensation and was subject to much ridicule. So that's a really interesting example of people who are saying they traveled through time through dreams or through sleep. And that's sort of how it was taken. Then other people say no, what they meant was that they physically traveled. But obviously in those times, there was no vehicle that they would have come up with. There was no DeLoreans back in 1911. So that could be, yeah, a lot of people have seen it in a couple of different ways. Then we had Chaplin's time traveler. In October 2010, Northern Irish filmmaker George Clark uploaded a video clip entitled Chaplin's Time Traveler to YouTube. The clip analyzes bonus material in a DVD of the Charlie Chaplin film The Circus. Included in the DVD is footage from the film's Los Angeles premiere at Grauman's Chinese Theater in 1928. At one point, a woman is seen walking by holding up an object to her ear. Clark has said that on closer examination, she was talking into a thin black device that had appeared to be a phone. Clark concluded that the woman was possibly a time traveler. The clip received millions of hits and was the subject to televised news stories. Nicholas Jackson, associate editor of The Atlantic, says the most likely answer is that she was using a portable hearing aid, a technology that was being just developed at the time. Philip Skroska, an archivist at the Bernard Becker Medical Library in Washington University in St. Louis, thought that the woman might have been holding a rectangular ear trumpet. So these are all possibilities, but a lot of people like to say, no, she definitely had a mobile phone. My question with that is, if she was a time traveler and she did have a mobile phone, how was she getting service? Why would she have it up to her ear? I don't know. It sort of makes you scratch the noggin. So then we covered the present day hipster in the 1941. So I got it wrong at the start. I thought it was the JFK assassination. No, it wasn't. The hipster was at a bridge opening in the South Fork Bridge in British Columbia. So, 1941, much earlier. But still, it still stands that sunglasses did exist back then. So, it's not really, it doesn't really change much at all. So, mobile devices in 1943. A photograph from 1943 of genuine authenticity showing a scene of holidaymakers on a beach in Cornwall was uploaded to Twitter November 2018 by Stuart Humphreys, which was alleged by some viewers to show a time traveler operating an anachronistic mobile device such as a phone. This tweet was picked up by news outlets, Fox News in the US, and various tabloid newspapers in the UK, such as the Daily Mirror. Fueled by media websites such as Lad Bible, it gained global coverage via news outlets in Russia, Iran, Taiwan, Hungary, China, and Vietnam, amongst others. Humphreys, the original uploader, was quoted in these stories as dismissing the time travel theories, saying that the man in question was probably just rolling a cigarette. Then we had the story of Rudolph Fence. The story of Rudolph Fence is an urban legend from the early 1950s and has been repeated since as a reproduction of facts and presented as evidence for the existence of time travel. The essence of the legend is that in New York City in 1951, a man wearing a 19th century clothing was hit by a car. The subsequent investigation revealed that the man had disappeared without a trace in 1876. The items in his possession suggested that the man had traveled through time from 1876 to 1951 directly. The folklorist Chris Orbeck investigated the story and found it originated in a science fiction book of the 1950s, A Voice from the Gallery by Ralph M. Holland, which had copied the tale from I'm Scared, a short story by Jack Finney. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. This is one that I'm going to be doing a bit more of a deep dive on eventually. So this is where time travel will come back up in the future. So between 2000 and 2001, an online bulletin board user self-identified as John Titor became popular as he claimed to be a time traveler from 2036 on a military mission. Holding the many worlds interpretation as correct and consequently every time travel paradox as impossible, he stated that many events which occurred up to his time would indeed occur in this timeline. These include a devastating civil war in the US in 2008, followed by a short nuclear World War III in 2015, which will kill 3 billion people. Obviously, that didn't happen. In the years following his last post and disappearance in 2001, the non-fulfillment of his specific predictions made his popularity decrease. Criticism has pointed out flaws in Titor's stories, and investigations suggested his character may be a hoax and a creation of two siblings from Florida. The story has been retold on numerous websites in a book in the Japanese visual novel anime Steins Gate and in a play. He may also have been discussed occasionally on the radio show Coast to Coast in the respect the T-Dor story may be unique in terms of broad appeal from originally limited medium as an internet discussion board. So yeah, this became really hyped up, and there's a lot of weird stuff. He belonged to a military unit that was sent back in time to save the world. And when those things didn't happen in 2015, 2008, basically that was him saying, see, I told you it didn't happen because I came back and told you what was going to happen. I don't think his reach went that far, but they claim that that's exactly why it all stopped. So we've got a few more. Similar to John Titor, Bob White or Tim Jones sent an unknown number of spam emails into the internet between 2001 and 2003. The subject of the emails was always the same, that an individual was seeking to find someone who could supply a dimensional warp generator. In some instances, he claimed to be a time traveler stuck in 2003, and others he claimed to be seeking parts only from other time travelers. Several recipients began to respond in kind, claiming to have equipment such as the requested dimensional warp generator. One recipient, David Hill, set up the online shop from which the time traveler purchased the warp generator, formerly a hard drive motor. While another, Dave, charged thousands of dollars for time travel courses before he would sell the requested hardware. The name Bob White was taken from an alias that the second Dave used when responding. Soon afterwards, the time traveler was identified as professional spammer Robert J. Tadino, known as Robbie. Tadino's attempts to travel in time were a serious belief, and while he believed he was perfectly mentally stable, his father was concerned that those replying to his emails had been preying on Tadino's psychological problems. In his book, Spam Kings, journalist Brian S. McWilliams, who had originally uncovered Tadino's identity for Wired magazine, revealed that Tadino had been previously diagnosed with dissociative disorder and schizophrenia. Explaining the psychological problems of which his father had spoken, Tadino's time traveler was referenced in the song Rewind by jazz trio Groovily on their 2003 album Are We There Yet. The song used phrases taken from Tadino's emails within its lyrics. So we've got a few more. We had Michael McIntosh. He believes he had been sent to a future timeline where he is the US commander-in-chief, revealing the bizarre news in a video. The time traveler claimed he had been taken to Mars at the age of 5 and has numerous psychic abilities. The supposed time traveler worked alongside former US President Barack Obama on a top secret time travel operation. Speaking to paranormal investigators from YouTube channel Apex TV, McIntosh said the mission gave him access to technology dubbed Chronovision, and his story is certainly one that we will do a deep dive into. Then we had Andrew Carlson, who was supposedly arrested in March 2003 for SEC violations for making 126 high-risk stock trades and being successful on every one. As reported, Carlson stated with an initial investment of $800 and ended with over $350 million, which drew the attention of the SEC. I wonder why. A later report suggested that after his arrest, he submitted a four-hour confession wherein he claimed to be a time traveler from 200 years in the future. He offered to tell investigators such things as the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden and the cure of AIDS in return for a lesser punishment and to be allowed to return to his time craft. Although he refused to tell investigators the locations or workings of his craft, a mysterious man posted his bail and Carlson was scheduled for court hearing but was never seen again. Records show that he never existed. The Carlson story likely originated as a fictional piece in Weekly World News, a satirical newspaper, and was later repeated by Yahoo News, where its fictitious nature became less apparent. It was soon reported by other newspapers and magazines as fact. This in turn drove word of mouth spreading through email boxes and internet forums, leading to far more detailed descriptions of the events. So basically a giant game of Chinese whispers. But who knows, maybe we can dig this one back up and we might find some weird shit. Then we had the Swedish man, Hakan, who uploaded in 2006 a video that shows Hakan claiming that he had been accidentally transported to 2046 when attempting to fix the sink in his kitchen. There in the future, he immediately met someone who revealed and proved to be himself about 70 years old, and with whom he had a great time. He filmed a short footage of the two smiling and hugging each other and showing the tattoo they had on their right arms. Story was a marketing campaign promoting the pension plans of insurance company AMF. So you can see where a lot of these have had faults. There's been problems at the end. They sound great to start off with, but it turns out that it's not what we thought it would be. So then you had the Philadelphia experiment and the Montauk Project. There are other things that we will cover in the future. But the Philadelphia experiment is the name given to a naval military experiment, which was supposedly carried out at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA, sometime around October 28, 1943. It is alleged that the U.S. Navy destroyer escort USS Eldridge was to be rendered invisible or cloaked to enemy devices. The experiment is also referred to as Project Rainbow. Some reports allege the warship traveled back in time for about 10 seconds. However, popular culture has represented far bigger time jumps. The story is widely regarded as a hoax. The U.S. Navy maintains that no such experiment occurred, and details of the story contradicted well-established facts about the Eldridge as well as known laws of physics. And the Montauk Project was alleged to be a series of secret U.S. government projects conducted at Camp Hero or Montauk Air Force Station on Montauk, Long Island, for the purpose of exotic research, including time travel. And Jacques Lee describes the allegations of the Montauk Project as an outgrowth of stories about the Philadelphia experiment. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many. We could go on for a whole nother episode. And we probably will do another episode where we talk about time travel through thought and through sleep, which is a really interesting one, and time travel without realizing you've time traveled. So shifting between realms, or the idea that we see ghosts, we take photos of ghosts, and that's possibly a person shifting through time and slipping between our dimensions without realizing it. So they're all things that we'll cover in the future. For now, it's getting quite late, and I'm getting tongue-tied non-stop as it is. So apologies about the bit of poor audio. I've got a bit of a toothache at the moment, so I'm dealing with that. And but I hope you did enjoy this. I know it was a lot of information and a lot of sciencey stuff in there too, but yeah, I just want to do something a little bit different today. All right, so you know where to find me. You can find me on Twitter at Aussie Oddball. Also on the Instagram, the same, at Aussie Oddball. And you can email me. Send me things you want to talk about. If you think that there's some different ways of looking at time travel or anything, cryptids, paranormal, ghosts, demons, aliens, I say aliens? No. All that. Send it to me. If you've got stories, send them to me at the OddballAussie@hotmail.com. And yeah, I hope to hear from you all soon. And make sure you check out TeePublic. Buy some merch there. Mugs are great. I don't have caps. I'm working on getting caps. These shirts are great. And stickers. Honestly, if you can only chuck a couple of dollars, buy some stickers. I don't need the money from the stickers, but it's great to help me get the word out there. You know, buy a handful of stickers and give them out to your friends, or stick one on the back of your car, that type of thing. But anyway, I'll leave you now, and we'll be back next week with a whole new show. And hopefully something different to talk about. But anyway, for now, look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.